Bonjour à tous.
Hello and
Bienvenue
welcome to Talking Europe.
Ici,
we're pleased to welcome one of the executive vice presidents of the European Commission, Stéphane Séjourné from France. Hello, Mr. Séjourné.
Hello, and thank you for inviting me.
We are in the studios of the European Commission in Brussels. You are in charge of prosperity and industrial strategy. After President Macron's victory in 2017, you were his political advisor, then an MEP for 5 years. During which time you led the centrist Renew group. You were French foreign minister in 2024, and you were then nominated European commissioner. On May 21st, you put forward your strategy for the single market, saying that in this uncertain world, Europeans have to intensify trade among themselves and reduce barriers within the EU.
How?
Well, first of all, the international context means that the internal market now has the value of a safe haven for European companies. Some of our companies went international even before they went European. There are many reasons for this, not least regulatory barriers between countries. So, for a French company to go to Germany or Italy to market its products, to go European throughout the internal market is something of an administrative and bureaucratic nightmare. Firstly, because you need to have a subsidiary to adapt to European law, to national law, to look at the regulatory differences, and also to look at the differences in the way goods are marketed. We have put in place a number of measures to simplify and harmonize all the regulations. There will be an objective, including a 28th regime, for companies that want to operate on the European market. Markets can close. We can see that in the United States and in China. We're trying to reduce our dependence. That's the strategy. And so the European market of 450 million consumers must be a safe haven and a growth area for our European companies, and particularly for French companies.
So you're proposing to cut companies' administrative costs by 400 million euros. An initial simplification package of 8 billion euros has already targeted small and medium-sized enterprises, but they get an exemption from CO2 reporting requirements. Isn't that a kind of deregulation in disguise and not very green either?
No, because the objective is quite clear. We have decided to keep the standards we set during the last mandate. The standards are clear. The goal is to decarbonize our economy by 2050. The real difference in this mandate is that we are being pragmatic. The international situation has changed the context of economic uncertainty within the internal market and therefore within our own European economy. So we need to be flexible. That does not mean deregulating our system. It means reducing paperwork, harmonizing rules, and pushing the member states to achieve fiscal and administrative convergence in a number of sectors. So we've changed the way we do things. We're no longer pursuing a horizontal strategy, as we did in the past, but rather sector by sector, occupation by occupation, regulated profession by regulated profession. And I don't confuse the path with the objective. The objective is fixed to decarbonize the economy.
But to get there, the path itself has to be clear, though.
Well, if you set the path in stone, you lose all room for maneuver in negotiations and also in terms of economic flexibility.
The French president and the German chancellor have called for the abolition of corporate due diligence requirements. NGOs say this is a dismantling of the Green Deal with the help of the right-wing European People's Party.
The goal of the Corporate Sustainability Due Diligence Directive was not the Green Deal as such, but it did impose standards and regulations on companies. It made European companies responsible for the entire value chain, including outside the European Union. So it started fairly low down the value chain. In other words, the subcontractor of the subcontractor of the subcontractor also had to be checked by your European company. Otherwise, you could be liable before the European courts. This raised various problems of legal uncertainty. We put forward a proposal at the start of this mandate to stop this legislation and start again from scratch. Now there is a discussion about overhauling these two texts. And Germany and France have made a proposal to abolish them. To do that, we still need a majority because it's a matter of co-decision between the European Parliament and the Council.
donc Parlement européen et Conseil.
And we're not there yet.
We're not there yet. But I think the French president has been very clear. At a time when the Americans are making very radical choices, we also need to be very clear about our European regulations.
The threat of American tariffs has had an impact on European growth. And opinions are divided. Some want a very strong eye for an eye response to the U.S. tariffs. But there's also the idea of negotiating. Of making a gesture to Donald Trump. How do we get out of this?
I don't think we should have a doctrine. That might surprise you, but in these times, you shouldn't have a doctrine. You shouldn't be choosing one option or another. I'm in favor of not making any definitive proposals until we have an American proposal on the table and a clearly defined framework for new trade cooperation with the United States. Some sectors will require full reciprocity in terms of tariffs. This is the case for aerospace, for example. If there is a 10% tariff on Airbus, there should be a 10% tariff on Boeing. But for other sectors, it is not in our interests, our European interests, to reciprocate. I think Europe has pursued these negotiations well. It hasn't made as much noise as the US, but it has been united.
A market that especially interests you, Stéphane Séjourné, is the automotive industry. This sector employs 13 million people. You say that the car industry is in danger of dying because of future American tariffs of 25%, because of bad strategic choices, because of excessive European standards.
All three things that you mentioned, to be honest with you. And so, yes, there is a major risk because we export cars. Note that manufacturers have also decided to produce outside the European Union for other markets in which they intend to develop, and we must continue to be able to help them. As far as Europe is concerned, things are pretty clear. Some of the regulations could weaken demand for vehicles if we don't have European purchasing criteria for electric cars in corporate fleets. We won't be able to boost demand, and we won't be able to come out on top. European manufacturers currently have a problem with vehicle orders. There are no electric vehicles on the second-hand market today, and we are unable to offer, not only to French consumers, but to all Europeans, cheap vehicles with a life expectancy of 2, 3, or 4 years, which in reality represent 80% of the market in many countries.
So the end of internal combustion cars?
The end of internal combustion vehicles in Europe.
From 2035. Do you still believe in that?
Ending the sale of internal combustion cars has to be combined with a genuine European purchasing strategy. And we need to boost that strategy, particularly when it comes to sales of electric vehicles, with an increased demand for business vehicle fleets. Secondly, we need to find new markets, and that means new trade agreements. I know that it's not popular in France to talk about trade agreements, but in the current political climate, if we want to reduce our dependence on China, if we want to protect ourselves from a future American market that could close, we absolutely must.
So Mercosur, Latin America.
It's absolutely essential to find new outlets and new markets. This means protecting our own industries, but also finding outlets for industries where we have ourselves overcapacity in Europe, and we actually do have a European overcapacity in the automotive industry.
On a point related to Ukraine, you are dealing with SAFE, the 150 billion euro loan program to boost defense production. These projects will require 65% of components to be produced by European industries. Do you think that European defense is taking off fast enough?
Well, we certainly fought for this 65% criterion because it wasn't initially an obvious thing to everyone in Europe. So I'd like to thank all the European countries for their change in mentality on this issue. The European production requirement of 65% is made up of components in equipment, so this necessarily involves European industry. At some point, you can't have equipment that is 100% American, 100% Korean, or one that doesn't use European components. So this is a small victory for Europe in terms of putting an end to naivety on this issue. It opens up new opportunities for orders from our manufacturers. Above all, it shows that Europe is also capable of being flexible with its budget. We have decompartmentalized all the European funds. We have sought out the cohesion funds in order to loosen constraints and to open up.
You have fully embraced the slogan, Choose Europe, in the face of Donald Trump, who is actually putting quite a few obstacles in the way of academics and public research aimed at new commercial partnerships and bringing in the world's best talent. The watchword is Choose Europe. But at the end of the day, we are investing less and less in research ourselves here in Europe. How can we claim to be attractive?
First of all, choose Europe. Choosing Europe means revising public procurement, introducing European preference clauses into a number of strategic sectors, and it means introducing the Buy European Act, which will be a small revolution for the EU and for all the countries that did not have the same concept as France.
Of European preference.
Things have moved ahead, and I'm sure I will be able to put forward a proposal as early as 2026 for a revision of European public procurement contracts and to introduce European purchasing clauses into them, to choose Europe, including not just for research and researchers, but also for industry. As far as the research side of Choose Europe is concerned, we are also committed to increasing our international attractiveness, since there are prospects of bringing in incredible talent, particularly from the other side of the Atlantic, who have found themselves with no money for research. These people are often very experienced, and they could make an enormous contribution to the European economy and to applied research for our industries.
Stéphane Séjourné, Executive Vice President of the European Commission, thanks for being our guest.
Thank you.
Thanks for watching Talking Europe. Do stay with us here on France 24. L'actualité continue.